Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Happy holidays, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush with you. Might be a little brief with it this week because we're breaking down bye games, looking ahead to a bye game, and probably going to save the Big East talk for next week. But it was a positive week, Phil. I mean, Marquette not only got two wins, but both of them relatively convincingly. So where do you want to start on this past week with the Grambling State and North Dakota State wins?
I think I just want to start with, hey, look, a Marquette team that took care of business, and we can get angsty and nitpicky about the Grambling and North Dakota State games, but they were quality bye opponents that, when all said and done, neither game was really in doubt. I know the North Dakota State game was a little closer than we would have liked, but, I mean, they were hitting shots out of nowhere that they had no right to hit.
Yeah, we talked about on the pod last week that they shoot a lot of threes, but normally not for a very high percentage. They were like a 32% shooting team coming in, and at one point in that game, I know they were 9 for 18. Right. So when a team that fires up as many threes, they're number one in the country as far as how many threes they shoot. Like, they attempt more threes, you know, per possession than any team in the country. But when they shoot for that high percentage, jacking up that many threes, they can make you a little nervous. But they cooled off and Marquette pulled away. So I think that's what made that game close.
Yeah, and I think the defense.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the defense with both games, the defense looked really solid. Even if even North Dakota State, even if it resulted in points, Marquette was guarding North Dakota State tight down to the end of the shot clock, and on multiple occasions North Dakota State bailed themselves out with hitting ridiculous shots late in the shot clock that, you know, 9 times out of 10 you live with. I don't think there was a lot of angst about the games or the result of the games, but I really think we need to take away that this is a solid Marquette team. We haven't exercised any demons necessarily, but I also don't think we need to be as worried as maybe we've been in years past sometimes.
You know, I guess one angle I wanted to take on those two games is, you know, if you heard our last podcast, we took questions from you guys, and one of the more interesting discussions was what was going to improve the most for Marquette over the rest of the season. You know, two-point field goal percentage, offensive rebound percentage, or turnovers. And I just thought I would look at those three numbers from the most recent game and see how they compared. As far as turnovers goes, Marquette's turnover percentage against Grambling, both of the numbers were, I'd say, relatively good. Below 20%, I guess, is acceptable. So they were at 19% for Grambling, which is better than most of Marquette's games this season. There were only, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 games prior to that where they were better than 19% on turnover percentage. But the North Dakota State game was actually their best game as far as turnover percentage on the season at 12.8%. So I guess you could have to say two positive numbers there. Offensive rebounding, the Grambling game was actually one of their worst of the season as far as offensive rebound percentage. The only games worse, Marquette was at 20% against Grambling. The only games worse than that, Wisconsin and Maryland. Well, Maryland was also 20%, but what do those games have in common?
Yeah.
Both lopsided losses, but when you play Grambling, I guess you can get away with that. But on the flip side, the North Dakota State game, 33.3% offensive rebounding percentage, which is really one of Marquette's stronger efforts of the season. Only 1, 2, 3 games on the season with better numbers than that. Those would be the Jacksonville State, Kansas State, surprisingly, and Loyola games, where Marquette had offensive rebounding percentage better than that. And the third number that we talked about last week was 2-point percentage, which has been a weak spot. The Grambling game was, yeah, I guess it was Marquette's best effort of the season as far as 2-point field goals. They were 13 of 23 for 56.5%. That is the highest number on the season. Only two other times this year were they at 50% or better. That was Robert Morris and Jacksonville. And then the North Dakota State game, not really bad either. 45.9%, which is, I guess, kind of middle of the road as far as Marquette efforts on the season, slightly above their season average. So maybe not a great number, but better than average. So,
and of those three numbers
I just spouted off there, Phil, what jumps out to you?
Probably the two-point percentage. I was going to say, you know, anytime you get a number that comes in above your average will go up. That's just how averages work. So, that's a positive. I think the two-point percent is the most, stands out the most to me. One, because I think it shows an effort. Not only did the percentage of two-point shots go up, but the amount of two-point shots they took went up as well. You know, and you can make an argument. I mean, Marquette's the second best team in three-point percentage in the country. So, you know, maybe you don't trade threes for twos when you're hitting at that clip. But I think, and especially when you consider how Kobe has been just ice cold for the last month, I think the fact that the two-point percentage is going up is, I think, reflective of the team kind of developing more consistent offense and not just settling for jump shots. They certainly will take the jump shots when they're there, but I think it showed, at least this week, a concerted effort to score inside the paint, which we haven't seen in the past.
Yeah, I think against by-game opponents, maybe you can try to work on some things that maybe you see as a flaw with your team. And yeah, they did try to get the ball on the side to the big guys a little bit more the last couple games, and the numbers reflect that. They did get a few easier buckets at the rim, so that was a positive as well as another good week for Sakar Anum. He had a couple really solid games and looks to be emerging as kind of that second scoring option that we were kind of looking for when the season began, Phil. What do you make of Sakar the last couple games?
Well, I think the first thing I take away is I think this answers the question we asked, you know, probably the third podcast of the season, you know, is Sakar and to another extent Brendan Bailey, are they flashing or are they getting consistent? And Sakar is without a doubt playing consistently on both ends of the floor. I mean, he's been playing the max minutes the last three or four games, and was certainly the most dependable offensive threat in the Kansas State game, and so I think what it tells me is that Sakar is comfortable in his role, and the team is comfortable in looking to Sakar, especially as I think it was Paint Touches pointed out that Marcus Howard's minutes are on average are actually lower this season than last season to date, which I think is a positive thing. And I think that's a result of, you know, players like Sakar being consistent offensively that enables Wojo to play lineups that don't require Marcus to be in the game.
And I also do wonder if maybe a little bit of that in the non-conference, especially against by-game opponents, has been Wojo holding him back just a little bit to maybe let some of these other guys grow and gain some confidence before they get into these really tough games where you would imagine Marcus could be playing, if not the entire game, 35-plus minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's probably some of Wojo saying, hey, we're gonna learn to play without Marcus a little bit, and these are the good opportunities to grow there. I agree, but I think that's also enabled by players like, you know, and I don't want to sound like a broken record singing his praises for like the third week in a row, but Jamal Cain has just been outstanding. Granted, he's not getting max
minutes.
Hey, man,
if the guy deserves praise, let's give it to him, man. He's playing well.
Yeah, and so you got Sakar, you got Jamal, to a lesser extent, Brendan Bailey, and Bailey defensively certainly in the game against North Dakota State was outstanding. He had, what, five blocks? He's like a mini Theo John out there. So, what was kind of your takeaway from the Sakar kind of performance of late?
My takeaway is that his three-point shooting may not be a fluke. You know, if he's shooting 40% on fewer than 20 attempts, then maybe say, maybe it's just a little hot streak. But he's up over 30. He's at 34 attempts now in the season, and he's shooting that ball pretty confidently. Now, I don't expect him to be at 47% for the entire season. That would be incredible. But if he stays above 40, or maybe even above 35, I would have signed for in the preseason. But the fact that he's shooting at 47% right now, and it's not necessarily a small sample size. Granted, he doesn't take nearly as much as a guy like Marcus. But I am at the point where maybe in the past when Sakar would attempt a three, I would hold my breath a little bit. I really don't now. And I kind of, like, to label him a shooter was probably inaccurate, but I have got a certain degree of confidence seeing Sakar let it fly from three now. And he's kind of, my opinion of him as a scorer has gone up a little bit. I'm a little more comfortable, and I guess confident, I don't know if confident is the right word, but I am more optimistic about him taking charge on the offensive end, because I really think he's, may not have like the most beautiful form on his three-point stroke, but it sure is working for him.
Well, and I think the key there is like you said, he's not taking a lot of threes. He is very selective with his threes. I'm sure there is a time, and the internet can prove me wrong, but I do not recall this season a time when Sakar forced a three or put up a three that was not in the flow of the offense, right? Like, so he's letting the offense come to him. He's not creating, he's not forcing shots, you know, unlike Marcus, who forces threes at times. But again, he's Marcus Howard and can, you know, has magical powers at hitting three-point shots from anywhere on the court. So you don't mind that. Sakar is about being selective in his shot. And so you're probably right. 45% is likely not sustainable, especially as the level of competition goes up. But I don't see any reason why it has to fall off that significantly. I think
Sakar's getting good looks. And when he gets a good look, he takes it confidently, I think, is basically right. What you're getting at there. And,
right, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a kind of good analysis of maybe why his percentage is so high. Because when he gets a wide open look, he'll step right into it. And he'll knock that down. And he's at 47%. Where can I sign to get that for the entire season?
And, right. Like I said, whose soul do I sell? I will sell your soul. Maybe even my own soul, but definitely yours. If we get 47% the rest of the season,
my soul may not be worth as much as it used to. But yeah, if we can make that deal. But I mean, the team is shooting 41.9% from three on the season as we record this on Sunday night. That is number two in the country. And wowzers! And like, considering we came into this season thinking we only had one 3-point shooter, the numbers are pretty positive, and it's getting to the point of the season as we're almost in January that you really can't call it a fluke on some of these guys anymore. That Sakar's at 47%, Brendan Bailey's at 42.5%, Greg Elliott's at 43%, Jamal Cain's at 44%. Those are outstanding numbers from three, and of course Marcus is Marcus. I mean, Marcus is at 46.6%. And taking a lot of them, which is exactly what you want from Marcus Howard. So, love the three-point shooting, love the progression from Sakar, and you know the other options continuing to develop around Marcus, who had another historic week. But before we get to that, I do want to touch on Kobe McEwen again. I think it seemed like in the last game, Wojo really kind of wanted Kobe to kind of play through his struggles. I wouldn't say he totally snapped out of it, but I think it is important, and I think we're going to probably see some, you know, more extended minutes from Kobe against Central Arkansas this week, because you really want him to get going, because, you know, he's capable of so much more offensively than what he's shown.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not – his performance over the last month is in the general discouraging, because you know he's better than that. But I'm not necessarily discouraged by his performance in that, like, I don't think this is unrecoverable, right? Like, at this point last season, I think we were really not feeling great about Chartouni. And there was no evidence that he would kind of be more than what he was. Kobe, both from his career at Utah State and just what we've seen on the court, he is capable of performing better than he has. And I don't know if it's a mental thing or just what it is. I think the one tweak, and you know, I am paid $0 to coach anyone, but the one tweak I would make, and they were even talking about it on the broadcast in the North Dakota State game, is I would encourage Kobe to get to the hoop more. One, he's a tremendous free throw shooter, so if he's going to get fouled, all the better. But two, just 93%. Get in and get some easier looks. I mean, I got to think his 3-point shooting is not nearly this off. Well, I mean, I guess he's hitting at a 32% rate, so that's not terrible. But I just feel like he's in
his head. Been a great 3-point shooter either. But yeah.
Yeah, I just think he's in his head, and I just like to see him go to the rack more, and just kind of start his offense from inside out, and let it come to him that way. That would be my unsolicited, uneducated coaching advice.
Not a bad take. We'll see what he does against Central Arkansas, a team that he should have opportunities to do mostly whatever the team wants against them. We'll get to Central Arkansas in a bit, but it's kind of a tie-in here as we talk about another historic week for Marcus Howard. Past a few notable marks, if you go to cracksidewalks.com, Alan Bukowski has a pretty good article that kind of chronicles all the marks that Marcus Howard can eclipse this season as it relates to various scoring marks at Marquette and in the Big East and whatnot. But the big one this week was Marcus, along with his brother Jordan Howard, who I'm sure many of you know, played at Central Arkansas. He's playing overseas now. But with Jordan's scoring effort at Central Arkansas and now Marcus's at Marquette, they have passed Steph and Seth Curry for all-time NCAA brothers scoring mark. So two siblings, two brothers in the NCAA Division I, their point total has now exceeded the Curry's. It's kind of a weird record, not something that people are probably going to talk about, but I guess it just speaks to the work that the Howards put in as they were growing up, and that they have two sons who became such dynamic scorers at the college level.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've talked about it in past Marcus Howard fanboy sessions, but I think it just really drives home the point. We really got to appreciate what we have in Marcus currently, and kind of what the joy. There have been frustrating moments at times, but the pure excitement and just the pure scoring that Marcus is able to do, and do in all sorts of different ways, right? Like, he is not just – he's a tremendous three-point shooter, but that isn't the extent of his game, right? Like, he can go inside, he can take shots, hit free throws, though, you know, he still needs to work on his free throw this season. It's his rate's down considerably, but – yeah, what do you take away from kind of that record and the Marcus experience?
I guess not much more than what I said. It is kind of a weird record. I had to catch myself there when I said siblings, because that technically wouldn't be correct. Even though it's kind of weird comparing and combining, you know, men's and women's basketball, but if you're saying siblings, that record technically belongs to Cheryl and Reggie Miller, who, you know, Cheryl, one of the greatest women's players of all time, and then Reggie Miller, a Hall of Famer himself, but if he gets 635 points total, Marcus, on the season, then he and his brother would pass that mark. So that is certainly attainable.
That would be crazy. And talk about Jordan riding on Marcus's back for that one, right?
Marcus is going to have to do most of the scoring, but it's not like Jordan is just just kind of along for the ride. Kind of like the name on the list, Larry Bird and his brother. You know, Larry did all the heavy lifting in that combination. But yeah, so that's another mark. The sibling mark is something Marcus is going to have to eclipse later this year. But for now, it's for brothers in men's basketball. He passed that. But yeah, what do I take away from it is kind of just what I said earlier. It's just get a salute. The Howard family, I know they have an older brother they train with, and this has kind of been a dream for them for a long time, for having, you know, the two younger brothers both play professionally, and, you know, Jordan is doing that now overseas, and Marcus is certainly going to play professionally. We don't know if it'll be NBA or if he'll go overseas as well, but it's just a lot of hard work that the family's put in, and then that the boys have put in on their own at their respective colleges, and you just salute them for becoming the scores that they have, so kudos to that. And, you know, another record that Marcus passed this week. Again, it is kind of awkward when you're cross, you know, comparing men's and women's records, because they are two different leagues, two different sports, I guess. But Marcus did surpass Alize Blockton for the all-time Marquette scoring leader, regardless men or women. So he passed her. So no basketball player in Marquette history, men or women, has scored more than Marcus Howard. So he did eclipse that mark. He also moved into the top 10 all-time in Big East scoring this past week. And next mark that he could pass, he needs, well, he would have to have a pretty big game. He would have to have 48 points to get the new Big East scoring record, so since realignment. So if he has a gigantic game against Central Arkansas, he could get that this week. Otherwise, that would probably come in their first Big East game or maybe their second one. And then he needs just a few more threes to pass Steve Novak for all-time Marquette three-point makes. He needs 42 on the season, and he currently has 41. So one to tie, two to pass Steve Novak this week. So that is a record he will very likely get this week for career three-point field goals made as a Marquette Golden Eagle. Steve Novak is at 354. Howard, one behind him right now. So just ticking them off, man. And like Alan's got a great list here on cracksidewalks.com. Go check it out of all the various scoring records. Again, some of them Marquette-related, some of them Big East-related. And you can scroll all the way down to something that's, you know, some of the ones that are kind of likely unreachable, like it would take him averaging upwards of 30 points a game and getting to the Final Four. But it's cool to see what is achievable for Marcus Howard this year, and I wouldn't put anything past him necessarily because we've seen him blow up for 50 before.
Yeah, well, and I mean, his scoring average has been higher this season than last season on fewer minutes. So he's getting, even though he's being used, you know, his efficiency is going up, even though his minutes are going down because his scoring has not gone down with a reduction in his minutes. So
he's also creeping up on George Thompson for the all-time scoring average mark. Now, George Thompson, of course, was the all-time scoring leader for a while before Jerome McNeil broke his record about a decade ago. But George Thompson still has the record for points per game. I think it's 20.4. Marcus is currently at 20.3. So he's really closing in on George right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, if he can, I mean, I could see his 3-point per, he's at essentially 47% from three right now. I could see that ticking down, but I could also see his 2-point percentage ticking up a little bit. So I think this is sustainable, right? I mean, the competition will get tougher, but I don't see any reason why his scoring average is going to go down, barring, you know, some sort of god awful, you know, hex of a shooting curse or something like
right,
that.
Right, you know, if, or if, God forbid, he deals with some kind of injury that hampers him. But yeah, if he's healthy. And like I said, I do think, by design, Wojo may be holding him back just a little bit, just to, like we talked about earlier, get some other guys involved, get some confidence going with some of the other guys, so Marcus doesn't, you know, have to be the only guy when it gets into Big East play, when they're going to need a little more support. But I think once Marquette gets into Big East play, I think Wojo's really going to cut Marcus loose, and you may see some crazy scoring games from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've already seen him score, which is just crazy when you think of put it in the context of like the college game, right? He has scored four out of the nine games they've played. So almost 50% of his games, he has scored 30 points or more. Like, I feel like a 30-point game was a rarity the last couple of years, right? Like, has in the college game, right? Like, you would think someone scoring 25 points in a game was kind of a big deal in college. And
yeah, I mean, in college, it's tough to score 30 points in a 40-minute game.
Right, and he scored 26, 32, 38, 40, and 51. That's insane.
Yeah. And he may not, and actually, I don't think he's done with 50-point games either. I think he's got at least one more left in him.
I think he's got two. I'm going to be honest. I one of the games I would circle.
Yeah, I think
is we
were said
like
set the over under on 2.5 this year. I might have to take the over.
Yep, I definitely took the over, and I think one of them is going to be the Providence game, and I can only hope another one's going to be the DePaul game. But you know, who knows?
We'll see. Just touch on Central Arkansas really briefly. This is just the, you know, it's the next opponent for Marquette that's coming up on Saturday, the 28th. You know, according to KenPom, this is the worst opponent on Marquette's schedule. They are 299 at KenPom, so just a little bit lower than Robert Morris and just a few spots lower than Grambling State also. I love to talk about green and red numbers on KenPom, and boy, there's a lot of red on Central Arkansas. They, and I'm not trying to be a jerk about it, but you know, just facts is facts. Their numbers just aren't very good. They turn the ball over a lot. They don't shoot very well. The only two green numbers they have is free throw rate, so they do get to the free throw line quite a bit, and block percentage. So I don't know, maybe be careful when you're getting in the lane, because I guess they do have a 7-footer there, Hayden Koval. So I guess that's so the guy.
They can block without fouling. That's about it.
Yeah.
So maybe we shoot some threes.
Yeah, maybe a good day to let it fly from three. They're defending the three. They are one of the worst in the country. They are in the 300s there. Their effective field goal percentage on defense, one of the worst in the country. I mean, they're around 300 there. They turn the ball over a ton, and they don't force many turnovers. So if you think Marquette's turnover numbers are bad, Central Arkansas's are worse considerably. So basically what I'm telling you is this is another one of those games that Marquette should not only win, but win quite comfortably. Gosh, KenPom's got it at almost a 30-point spread. So, yeah. Just coming this away with a comfortable W and no injuries, and that's really all we care about before we talk about Big East play.
Yeah, well, and I think the one thing that'll be interesting is it kind of forces Marquette to take a hit on the strength of schedule. One of the things we haven't talked about, Marquette has had, Central Arkansas aside, because they're pretty not good, Marquette's had the toughest non-conference strength of schedule, per KenPom anyway, of the Power Six conferences.
Really?
I take that back. It just updated. Wisconsin actually has a tougher strength of schedule, but yeah, those jerks. But yeah, it was a tough non-conference schedule, I think, when it's all collectively said and done. It's interesting, right? Central Arkansas will certainly take it down, but.
Well, yeah, Marquette's played a lot of power conference opponents.
Yeah.
Out of 11 games, it's been 5 power conference opponents, plus a quality, I don't know, mid-major is even the right term for Davidson in the Atlantic 10, I guess you'd call it. Is it insulting to call the Atlantic 10 a mid-major?
It's an insult to mid-majors, I think.
I wouldn't call it a power conference, that's for sure.
No.
But, Davidson's a quality opponent, and then North Dakota State was a pretty decent opponent. I think that's a turn. I mean, North Dakota State looks like they could be a tournament team, if you ask me. Coming out of they're still in the Summit League, right? North Dakota State could come out of the Summit League the way they
shoot. Yeah, absolutely. They look good, right?
Yeah.
I do need to correct. I misstated. So Marquette, per KenPom, Marquette's the top non-conference schedule in the Big East, fourth best against Power Six. So the fourth best of the Power Six schools.
Okay, that makes sense to me. But I think this has been a quality schedule that Marquette's put together for this season. I think it's appropriate for the talent level of this team. You know, there were some challenges there, some that they passed and some that they fell short, but still I think they learned some things about themselves, and I think they're, as long as there's no disaster against Central Arkansas, they should come away with it 10-2, which puts them in a pretty good position to be a tournament team, as long as they can have a average to above average Big East season. Making the tournament should not be a problem for this team. So I think they had an appropriate schedule of, again, for the talent level of this team.
Yeah, and again, you touched on it earlier, but I mean, the thing that just kind of boggles the mind a little bit is how well this, against that tough schedule, how well this team has been shooting the three, mm-hmm. when that was perhaps one of the biggest doom and glooms about the Hauser transfer was, well, we're just not going to be any good at three-point shooting, and,
right.
and that's why we were going to the two big lineup, right? With we were just going to steer away from the trend in college and NBA basketball about, you know, threes everywhere, and you know, we've gone the other way, so what do we know?
Yeah, as we approach January, I mean, the KenPom numbers are more accurate to the current teams. And what I mean by that is, like, some of the metrics that were spilled over from the previous season have kind of been filtered out. If they're not completely out by now, they will be probably in the next week or two. And Marquette's rated the number 32 offense and the number 40 defense. So, I mean, that's pretty good if you ask me. I'll take those numbers.
Yeah, especially considering, I mean, yeah, if you sacrifice a little bit of offense compared to where we were, what, 2 years ago when we had an offense that was a top 10 or a top 15 and our defense was like 125th, I think I definitely take this iteration over that.
Yeah, what was that, 2017, 2008, yeah, 2018, so the 17-18 season, Marquette 12th in offense, 182 on defense.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, a little more balanced these days, and I think that's what, I mean, that's obviously been a goal in recruiting over the last couple of years is to balance that out a little bit, even if you lose some of the crazy offense, to just be competent on defense has been a goal by the staff, both as far as developing players they have and bringing in new guys. And, you know, tip of the cap, so far so good in that regard. So, you know, I did want to touch real, again, we're probably going to do a deeper dive on the Big East in our next podcast. So after Christmas, before New Year's, that's where we will hopefully touch base with you again. But pretty good weekend for the Big East. As Paint Touches kind of pointed out on Saturday, and I kind of expanded on the point on Sunday, it was a perfect weekend. It was 10-0. So every Big East team won. Seven of the wins were over Power Conference teams, including Villanova's big win over Kansas, so another number one team goes down. Providence, back from the dead, I mean, they beat Texas, like, pounded Texas, 70-48. Like, where did that come from, Providence, who is projected to be the worst team in the Big East, but that was a quality win. And then Xavier beat TCU, that kind of capped it off. And the kind of funny note of it all, they all covered. So, like, the ones that were favorites covered the spread, and then all the underdogs won. I think only two or three of them were underdogs. But it's always good to have a weekend like that when you want to boost your overall conference numbers. Your, you know, RPI's not a thing anymore, but conference net, I guess, if that's a thing, or your conference KenPom numbers, those are all good metrics when you have a weekend like that.
Right, absolutely. Well, because that... I mean, what that does is then when you go into conference play and all you're doing is playing each other and beating up on each other, that gives you a solid foundation where, you know, even if you go, you know, 9-9 in conference play or something like that, if you've got wins over teams that were, you know, one loss or undefeated or at worst two loss teams in non-conference, that gives you something to fall back on or the committee to fall back on and say, hey, look, they're winning against proven quality teams within their conference because those teams went out and beat people in the other conferences, right? I mean, it puts the Big East right now, I would say, in terms of the power ranking and the numbers, they're number two behind probably the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. According to KenPom, they are just a shade behind the Big 12 right now. Big 10's number one, Big 12's number two, and Big East is just a few points behind the Big 12.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is just being top-heavy, right?
Maybe so, yeah. The only Big East team that really has a bunch of losses is Providence. They're 7-6. Seton Hall probably has more than most people would have expected before the season. They're at 8-4, and Miles Powell is... dealing with concussion issues. Sounds like some pretty scary concussion issues, actually. Did you hear what Parrish and Norlander were saying on the CBS podcast about, you know, during the Rutgers game, he reportedly asked his coach why they were practicing at Rutgers?
No, I didn't.
Like,
I mean,
like,
that's
not, like, not even a joke. Like, that's, like, a messed up thing to think that he took such a blow to the head that he literally did not know where he was and was, you know, not aware that there was a game going on.
I didn't listen to the podcast, or I didn't get a chance to watch that game. Did they immediately yank him out of the game? Like, if I had...
They had pulled him out of the game, and while he was, you know, sitting on the bench. He was definitely out of the game at that point and was not coming back. But, yeah, they... that's when he kind of said that.
Interesting. Yeah, that's scary, especially in basketball where it's much less known around concussions than some of the other sports.
You know, you hate to see people get hurt. Now, this is kind of like the last topic I'll touch on briefly, but you never want to see this because of guys getting hurt or anything. But the fact is, a lot of guys who were maybe in the National Player of the Year or first-team All-American discussion are out or gone for good in college basketball. You know, of course, James Wiseman is not coming back to Memphis. Cole Anthony is out for an extended period of time. Miles Powell is out for right now. You know, again, it's not to say it's a good thing that you're taking advantage of injuries, but the fact is, I think there's kind of an opportunity right now for Marcus Howard to maybe take a real push forward in that National Player of the Year / First Team All-American discussion with some notable names going down right now.
Yeah, well, the thing I have trouble, you know, and I don't watch a lot of college basketball and watch a lot of, you know, sports media, if you will, but the thing I struggle with, and maybe you have a flavor for it, Joe, do you think Marcus is undercovered, overcovered, or appropriately covered in terms of the All-American, the sports media landscape, right?
Like, That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question because, I think as we've said before, the fact that the Big East is not on ESPN does hurt, I think, at times. Because, like I said, the average fan, when they're like, I wonder if there's a college basketball game on. Let's see what's on. Where do they go? They go to ESPN. And then they go to ESPN2. And then they go to ESPNU. And then maybe they'll go to FS1. Right? And then, like, if they want to watch TV at night and just they're looking for some highlights. Or even if it's on Twitter, right? If they're saying, all right, let's go to – they're probably more than likely following ESPN or SportsCenter or ESPN analysts and probably not following a whole lot of Fox Sports or FS1 or, you know, things like that. So I think because of that, maybe, like, guys like Marcus Howard and Miles Powell may not get as much pub. Now, Miles Powell probably gets enough because he's in – the general New York area. I know technically he's in Newark, but that is the New York TV market. So I think maybe he gets plenty of attention because of that. And yeah, I guess if I have to choose one of the three, maybe a tad undercovered, maybe a little bit. I don't want to come off as saying the whole disrespect, nobody watches, nobody cares thing, because I think that's being a little dramatic with it. But for a guy of his talent, maybe he is just a teeny bit underrated. And, you know, an interesting thing, you bring that up, you know, I was listening to Titus and Tate, actually. And, like, Titus had a comment. Now, you know, that podcast is not as always totally serious. They kind of have a lot of fun on it. It's a great podcast. But, you know, he was going through his Player of the Year race at this moment. And one thing he said, and I just the way he said it, just kind of wondered if other national media feel this way. He said when he was listing his fifth guy for the All-American team, he said Marcus Howard. And or his Player of the Year race, he goes, my five All-Americans right now, and he listed them, and Marcus Howard was the fifth one he mentioned. But he said, I can't give him Player of the Year, man. Just I just can't, you know, because he chased off the Hauser brothers and just kind of just because nobody wanted to play with him. That's why I just can't get behind the whole Marcus Howard thing. And again, he kind of said it in a joking way, but just the way he said it, I kind of wondered if that is a – I wouldn't even say national. I mean, there may be some feelings like that even within the Marquette fan base of some bitterness, wondering if Marcus Howard is the reason the Hausers left, and they kind of look at him as a bad teammate. Granted, Titus didn't exactly say that, but that was kind of the connotation, if you know what I'm saying. If what I'm saying makes sense to you. I'm just wondering if that is a national feeling as well, if some people think he's a bad teammate or something like that, you know?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, because, I mean, there was definitely kind of that angst rooting around, you know, that the Hausers were chased off by Marcus.
To be fair, that was all over the Marquette fan base the day it happened.
Oh, for sure.
It is much, like, I don't hear it at all now. I think we're all kind of over it now. That was probably started from us as a Marquette fan base.
Oh, I totally agree. Totally agree, right? Like, I'm not putting that on the, you know, like, somehow the national media markets are pushing some narrative that we, in fact, did not plant the seed for in being all angsty and upset. But, I do wonder how much of that, like, is still there.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much, like, And I don't – I'm trying to think how to articulate this effectively, but one of the things with Marcus is he has won big games, no doubt, and has been part of big games. But by and large, games when you might get a lot of attention, say the Maryland game this season or technically even a rivalry against Wisconsin or some of the other games – right, like, he's been fine, but he has not, you know, led the team to a resounding victory or anything like that. So I do wonder if there's a little bit of the media narrative that kind of chalks it up to great stats on an okay team, right? Like that's all the team is when they're not really watching.
Yeah, that may be fair. Yeah, and Like I'm definitely kind of not gonna have time to do it now, but I was just kind of going through Marcus's game by game and thinking of like when has he had some of his biggest games against like against which opponents. Like obviously he had 50, you know, he had a huge game against Kansas State last year. Yep. You know, and he's had some good games against good opponents. I mean, shoot, he had 38 against Villanova last year. I mean, that was a big time stage, but we don't need to talk about what happened after that. He had a 25 point game and a loss to Villanova. Yeah, but I get what you're saying. Maybe a few more bigger games against bigger opponents. Like, yeah, correct. The fact that he played against Maryland and was totally shut out by Maryland's guards, and that happened last year against Kansas. You know, Dotson was really tough on him last year, and he had a tough game. You know, he didn't have his best game against Romeo Langford against Indiana last year. Yeah, had a frustrating game against Wisconsin this year. But still, it's not like he's never good against great opponents. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Maybe on a few more national games, like a Fox, like a game on Big Fox, or maybe the rare occasion when he's on ESPN to have a big game like that. You know, I think two of his 50-point games were both on CBS Sports Network, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the Providence one definitely was.
Yeah, I want to say both of his previous 50-point games were on CBS Sports Network, so those things can get lost when they're on that. Because I want to say the Buffalo game was on CBS Sports Network too. So
yeah, I think that's right.
But the thing is, when it comes to like national coverage of Marquette, I am definitely not the type who will chirp at the national analysts and say, "Hey, why not more Marquette? Talk more Marquette." Like, why don't you talk about Marquette? What about Marcus Howard? What about my team? You know, I recognize we are a very small fan base compared to most of the teams in the top 25. Really, most teams in college basketball, in power conferences. We're a small school. We have a small alumni base compared to most teams that you'll see in most programs that you see in the top 25. So I don't expect national media to talk about Marquette very much. If they're not in the top 25 or if they're not playing big games. So, but of course, selfishly, we always want everybody to talk about our teams and give them love and attention. But yeah, I think the, a little more team success would help. Not that 9-2 isn't great, but when you get blown out by Wisconsin and Maryland, maybe that knocks down your profile a little bit. So, you know, what would really help is if Marquette wins their next three, beating Central Arkansas, of course, then beating Creighton, and then beating Villanova. And that, I think, then would really raise the profile. I think kind of early January when most football is gone, especially like the second week of January when the college football playoff is done. And so college football fans are done with football and maybe they turn their eyes to basketball a little bit more. That's when maybe some of the expectations get reset a little bit, and a lot of writers who had been totally dialed in on football saying, all right, time for me to focus on basketball. Who's good right now? So that would be a good time to kind of reestablish Marcus in the national conversation is, you know, that second week of January when Big East play is just getting started and Villanova is on the schedule.
Yeah, like you said, I don't want to sound like I'm whining or complaining about the national media attention because I'm not. I mean, I think we get the appropriate amount of attention for what we're doing right now and what the team is. You know, I'd make an argument that the Athletic Wisconsin affiliate could, you know, bother to run a story on Marquette in the last 4 months period. There hasn't been a single story in the Athletic from the Wisconsin branch, you know, in during the season. So that's probably problematic as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, you would like to see a little bit more, but yes, especially if it's a premium subscription. Yeah.
Right. You know, so I just like I think the local I would actually put a lot more on kind of the local. Obviously, Ben Steele at the Journal Sentinel does an outstanding job, in my opinion, and covers this team, you know, well and fairly. But I just think the more regional coverage you can get, maybe, you know, surfaces this up at a national level. But again, you know, if Marcus is showing up however dismissively, you know, in the Titus and Tate pod, I heard that pod as well, right? Like, if he's showing up there, there's at least visibility. You know, I don't know what it's going to take for Marquette to be, obviously it's going to, the short answer is winning games, but for Marcus to really get a lot of visibility and Marquette to get a little bit of that as well. I don't know. There seems to be a little bit of gap between where we are and where the national media thinks we are.
Yeah. I mean, he is second in the nation in scoring.
Right.
So he was first for a while, but this kid, I actually don't know him, Javon Jackson from UT San Antonio. I should have made that a trivia. Asked you to guess where the only guy who is averaging more than Marcus.
I probably would have named Raul Castro before I named the gentleman you just spoke of. So, yeah,
I mean, if Marcus leads the nation in scoring and he's playing in a power league, that's certainly going to help. And, again, if he, you know, a few more bonkers scoring games, in a 40-point game here, a 50-point game there, you know, that gets you on the radar. People like to talk about that. Say, hey, but did you see what Marcus Howard did the other day? He scored 40 points. He scored 50 points. Things like that. So, just in summary, to answer your question, maybe a tad undercovered, but not grotesquely underrated. It's not egregious. I guess right. is what I'm saying.
Maybe. Yeah, I think we're undercovered, but not in a way that we should think that there's some bias or we should take offense. We're just, I mean, there's 351 teams out there. And we
353.
Just 353, yeah, you're right. So we happen to fall in probably of, you know, we're not in the top 25, so we're 20, you know, in the next 20 that are kind of others and afterthoughts, and we just happen to have the second best score in the country right now, and it, you know, those kind of go hand in glove in terms of, feeding each other.
And, you know, I keep referencing other podcasts, but, you know, Gary Parrish says this a lot, and it's a good point. That's why you say, well, it doesn't really matter if you're ranked or not. Well, it does in the regard, like, when, like, national guys are, like, doing a quick research, hey, let's see some games this week. If you're ranked, you appear on that page, right? You go scores this week, top 25 games, your name's in there. So, like, you may scroll and say, oh, Marquette's playing Wisconsin this week. Well, we should talk about that. Well, if you're not ranked and you're not playing another ranked team, then your name isn't in there, so you can get bypassed when people are like doing quick research of, all right, what's the game we should talk about on the podcast today? Let's see. Scroll. That one's no good. That one's, oh, Marquette's playing Xavier. That sounds like it would be a good game. Let's talk about that one.
Right.
So that's where being ranked matters a little bit. If you just like, you know, that tiebreaker, because obviously Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, you understand why they're always in the national conversation. They have huge fan bases, and they're always good, and they're always in the national championship picture. But when you want to be like that third or fourth or fifth topic on, you know, national shows, that's where being ranked matters. And I don't know what Marquette would have to do to get ranked right now. I guess it would be winning the next three would get it done. If you can beat right. Central Arkansas, of course, and then beat Creighton and Villanova, then maybe you might creep into that top 25-ish range. And if you're ranked, again, that's when you kind of sneak into national conversations a little more.
Well, and to your point, it kind of ties it all together, but it also comes down to that's where you need the Big East to be really good in non-conference because you've already got kind of an artificial ceiling there for in terms of media coverage because we're not on ESPN. So you combine that with Marquette also not necessarily winning any, like, we won good games, but we haven't won any, you know, nationally recognized games. And so all those things add up to, you know, a Marquette team that's probably, like you said, to use your word, not egregiously so, but probably flying under the radar at least a little bit.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit. But win games, that takes care of itself. Hopefully Marquette will do a lot of that over the next few weeks. So, again, a relatively short podcast this week. Just wanted to get a couple topics out there, a little bit of chat between the bye games, and we'll probably touch on the Big East a lot more in our next pod, which we will hope to do shortly before New Year's Day when things really get kicked off. As always, we welcome your feedback here on Scrambled Eggs. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com, leave your comments there where we post the podcast. It's right underneath. Just go to the comment section, leave a comment there. And, of course, you can always go to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And you can always have the podcast sent right to your phone. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well, if that is your thing. Phil, final thoughts?
Let's beat Central Arkansas, and before that, have a happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and any other holiday tradition you want to observe. Let's.
I hope Santa is good to all of you, because you all deserve it. You've been good this year, most of you anyway. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone. Merry Christmas.